Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com. The Magic Island in both Newport Beach, California and Houston, Texas provided great opportunities for the public to see professional live magic shows. It also afforded many professional magicians the opportunity to perform and hone their close-up, stand-up, and stage acts night after night in an ideal surrounding. The idea was to build a network of Magic Island restaurants around the country, like in Chicago, Atlanta, and other cities, which would have been great for the magicians to have some steady work from week to week as they could move from one Magic Island to the next. Unfortunately, the economy took a turn for the worse in the early 1980s, and that cut that vision short, and no other island was built after the completion of the one here in Houston. Those venues are memories in the mist and stories of days now long gone. But there are those brave few who have opened their own theaters dotting the country where magic is the main form of entertainment. In some cases, they are open on one or more nights a week, while others are more sporadic in their days of operation. Some are in hotels, others in abandoned comedy clubs, others in strip malls, and still others, well, basically anywhere they can find that has a stage and will accommodate an audience. This week we explore magic theaters in the U.S., featuring four theaters, two in Florida and two in California. Strangely enough, the ones in California are both located in the Bay Area. I recognize that there are a few others scattered throughout the country, but due to time constraints of this podcast, the four I talked with provide a good cross-section of venue styles and business strategies. If your travel plans take you anywhere near one of these theaters or any other around the land, I suggest you contact them for dates and showtimes and patronize them. We need to encourage entrepreneurship, and I know they will appreciate you helping to keep their doors open. And for those of you magicians who might be traveling for other performances in an area where there is a magic theater, then you might consider contacting the owners well in advance to see if there could be an opening to book you. So now it's time to hear what some of the theater owners have to say. So ladies and gentlemen, please give a big round of applause to The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com, and today I have with me as my guest Mr. Eric and Kim Olson. Hi there, how are you guys doing?
Great. How's it going with you, Scott?
Very good, thank you, and I appreciate you being available to talk a little bit about Wizards Theater. What I wanted to do with this podcast, actually, is to talk about various magic theaters that there are around the states. This is kind of a unique category, if you will, and there are really not a lot of places for magicians to go and perform, particularly in a stage situation on any kind of a regular basis. And so I had conceived a long time ago it'd be kind of cool if there was some sort of a circuit, if you will, you know, that a magician can go and work this place for a week and another place for a week, at least 4 to 6 places, so you know they'd have like 6 weeks of steady work someplace and just kind of get on a tour. So but getting to your particular place, I wanted to find out a little bit about more about the theater itself. It's located in a great tourist location right there in and around Orlando. Kissimmee, Florida is about how far away?
Oh, it's pretty much considered Orlando. We're 10 minutes from Disney. Right up 192 is Disney's 10 minutes away, Disney World. So we're right in a prime location.
Perfect. Well, so tell me something about it. I mean, how many nights a week is it open and that kind of a thing?
Okay, well, we're only open on Monday nights.
Okay.
The reason is because I do my own shows, my corporate events, and I didn't want a venue to take away from our main income.
Right. And so do you use this? I mean, do you invite clients to come into Wizards to see you perform?
Actually, I use it more for to break in my material as I host. So every time I host, I break in something new or over a couple of weeks, something new, so I can actually feel it's confident enough to do it at my corporate events. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes, it does. Well, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, though, again. How long have you been open and what made you open this to begin with?
We've been open 5 years.
Mm-hmm. 5 years in August.
Yeah. And it was actually, what inspired me, I was performing at the Magic Castle. I was in the parlor for a week, and a light bulb went off like, wow, there's only this many seats in the parlor, 80 mm-hmm. seats. If I could find a room that held somewhere around there, I think this is something more easy and sustainable compared to trying to be like everybody else doing these big illusion shows that just never lasted more than a few months in Orlando. They just opened and closed, you know?
So that model has been tried before, but just didn't work. And I'm surprised, you know, that's a big tourist space, again, in Orlando, big by Disney and Universal Studios and everything else. And so for a venue to open and not be successful with large illusions, I'm kind of surprised.
And I'll tell you why. It's because you're fighting the mouse.
You're competing with Mickey Mouse and Universal, you know, Harry Potter
and
as well.
And a family of four is going to do one or two theme parks, and they're going to pick one other special thing, whether it's Capone's Dinner Theater or Arabian Nights or a magic show. They're going to only pick one other venue. So you're going to have to fight that. And I think the other problem is people don't realize to be in those boxes and, you know, to have your flyers and all over Orlando, you're looking at about $100,000 a year just in advertisement in those to make sure you are next to all those flyers and all those boxes. So you have to be willing to put that kind of money out in advertisement just to fight with everybody.
Yeah, I think the marketing of that in order to be successful would be quite an outlay of expense, certainly, to, first of all, get it up and going. You know, I think, for an example, to Warren and Annabelle's in Hawaii, that, you know, it was kind of slow getting that started, but now it's like a number one tourist spot and a big destination. So it just takes a while, I think, for that to kind of get known. Yeah. So the place that you have now then can seat how many people?
50 to 55. We try to keep it right at 50 so it's more comfortable seating and elbow room and all that. But on certain acts, we've had push it five more people because people come in going, I'm always here. Why don't I have a seat? You know.
So you have a lot of regulars, obviously, of other magicians who live in and around the area, or just other people who are non-magicians, or a combination of both?
A combination of both. We have several hobbyists that are retired that this is like their Friday night is you know, our Monday for them.
And we get snowbirds, so they rotate in and out every year, which is nice.
But when they're in town, they're there every Monday.
And we have quite a few local supporting magicians that are very supportive of us. And you know what? Some of these guys that are the magicians never really liked going to the clubs. They didn't like that. But they don't mind coming in, seeing a magic show, and leaving, and not feeling that they have to do the whole club meeting. So that's really helped us out, too.
And you host lectures there as well.
Yes, exactly. So then we'll do, if a big name comes in, we'll do the show from 7 to 8, and then at 8:30, they'll do their lecture, and we charge an extra $15 for the lecture, and the performer, you know, we'll do that after the show. So we usually contain most of those 50, and then some people come in after work just for the lectures, which is nice.
Tell me something about the building itself. Is it a standalone building? Is it a strip mall? Is it a full-blown theater kind of an experience? Or, you know,
it's a very unique situation. This hotel, inside the hotel next to the pool, it's a little castle-looking building, and it has its own little lobby and our theater room and a green room that we also use as our lecture room and its own bathrooms. So it's really the perfect space.
Yeah, it used to be a kids club for the hotel, and they told us they used to have kids clubs and stuff, but then what happened after 9/11, nobody wanted to drop their kids off anymore, so then it was like an empty space, and then we just used it for meeting rooms.
Did they contact you, or were you going out after you said you worked at Magic Castle there, Eric, and then you had this idea, well, I can open up my own little theater. Did you start going around trying to find a place, or did you know about this already and it kind of put two and two together in your mind and you went directly there first, or how did this come about?
No.
We go walking through places all the time.
24/7, actually.
That's where we were this afternoon, checking out new venues.
But what happened was I come home and I go, we need a parlor show, and I forget, you know, Kim hasn't been to the castle yet, so she looks at me like, what are you talking about, a parlor show?
Yeah.
I go,
yeah.
50 seats. I go, I'll tell you what, let's just go up and down 192. I have a good vibe there, and let's just walk in places. And so we would just as long as you look like you know what you're doing, you just keep walking. You open up doors. If somebody asks you what you're doing, oh, we're thinking about having an event. And people are like, oh, feel free to walk around. They think they're going to make money.
Sure.
You know? And so we're like, no, too big, too small. I don't like the parking. And then we saw this little building. We walked in, and some guy, a manager goes, can I help you? Because we're just wandering, you know. And Kim opened her mouth and said, well, my husband wants to do a magic show. And they go, perfect day. The general manager just happens to be in. Let me introduce you.
He walked us right into the GM's office. We talked to him. And he said, that sounds great. When can you start?
Just like that. We're like, what?
It was like, and we walked out of there with a 2-week notice of we're starting this.
He goes, I like the concept. You have 2 weeks. Get it going. We're like, oh, okay.
Wow. Well, it's always good when you have a deadline, because that way that you're really going to get something done.
Right.
Right.
So what did you do then? I mean, did you have to build tables and curtains and put in lights and sound, or was part of that already there, or what did you do?
We have already, from his shows, we had backdrops and posters that he uses to decorate a stage mm-hmm. already. So we just made it so that we could hang those up every week. Everything is portable. We take it down and set it back up.
Every single week, yeah.
Oh, you don't leave things there for the week?
No.
We have acquired 2 closets now that lock up. So.
In the hotel, but technically it's not set up. We have to pack it all down, put it in a storage room, and then we go get it. We get up there about 4 o'clock on a Monday and set up the room for the exes, so they can get in there by 5 o'clock and do whatever they need to do.
But if it was successful enough, I assume that you would want to run that all week long.
We would. There's many factors to that. Eric's out of town a lot for corporate gigs.
Mm-hmm.
We also have several other resorts that we have one night gigs at every week. And we also have 2 kids. So
yeah.
My biggest fear of having a full-time place was I didn't want my kids to grow up in the back room of whatever
right.
we were doing.
And to be honest, Scott, when we first opened it, it's really changed. When it was going to be my room every Monday, thinking I get all these hotel guests. This is my concept at this point. It'd be my room, 50 people. I can do
50
my
new people
new
every week.
Every week.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen. These magicians in Orlando found out about it. They came in, and then I was getting the same people by my third week. I'm like, listen, you know, my act's my act. There's only so much material you can change to be solid. And it happened to fall in my lap that Michael Amar lives in Orlando now, and he mm-hmm. came up to me and he said, hey, Eric, I got a weird question. I have some new material that I need to work on before I take it on the road for a lecture. Could I do your wizards? And I'm like, yeah, I'm out of material, and the people are coming back. I would love for you to do a night. Then he got done, had a great time, called me, goes, hey, you know, Doc's in town next week, Eason. I know it sounds weird. I know you'll be another night out, but could Doc do your room? I'm like, yeah, he can. And it's just weird how it started steamrolling. The magician started calling me and going, hey, I heard you had this room on Monday. Could I do your room? And then I started going, oh, wait a minute. This is what I need to do. Instead of worrying about me, I can still host it and work on stuff. I'll start bringing in acts. And as long as, you know, they're paid on time and they have a happy venue. And the audience at Wizards, they're really the credit to this, because every performer walks out. It's not about the money when they walk out. It's like, wow, that was such a good – the performers leave on such a high, you just want to do Wizards again.
Yeah.
Right. I would think, though, that they would want to stay there a little bit longer. I mean, once you have an act, that's one of the advantages of having a club like the Magic Castle or wherever, that you're going to be able to do it over and over and refine it and work this line or that little bit of choreography or different music or whatever that's going to be in there. If you do it, you know, a couple times a night or several times a week. So again, I would ask that even though you have these other things that you're going to be doing, it would think that'd be something that you could have that would be sustainable. That is, that if you hired a manager, I mean, you could still go and do whatever you want to do, and someone can come in for that week, perhaps, and that way that, you know, just have it as an ongoing kind of a thing.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, what works for Wizards is most of the performers I get come either in a town to do a trade show, a corporate event, or they're just coming to bring their family on the weekend to Disney.
Mm-hmm.
So then I can get them on a Monday.
I see.
But a lot of the big names have to fly out to other events anyway. So what I think would happen is I'd have to work too hard on switching all the time. Like maybe somebody could only work till Wednesday and fly out. Where by having it one night for what I do, it's real easy for me to get some of these big names for one night. At the end of their already what they're making over the weekend. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Because that's something that's just going to be, as they would say in Louisiana, just kind of lanyap. That's just something that's a little bit extra on top.
Yes.
Of whatever else that they had planned. You know, here at the Magic Island, that often we would hire people who were cruise ship magicians who were on land for a while. So they already had, you know, several month contracts in which they were performing somewhere else, and then they would be back on land for a while. And it's like you got a few weeks or months or whatever, and say, hey, I'll work a week or two or whatever. And so it kind of worked out for them in between. So they didn't have the corporate opportunities that the guys who are on land all the time have. And that's part of the trade-off. If you go to sea, a lot of times that you kind of lose contact with a lot of your corporate clients. And so when they come back, rather than trying to get those going, they're looking for these kinds of venues, perhaps, where they can go and work.
Right. And we're also trying to – we're doing this grant right now. We're working on it. If you go to our Facebook, you can see down there and you vote for us. And we actually are trying to get a little more money to take us to the next level.
Good.
So, yeah. So we are working on it. It's just a slow – I believe in these baby steps, and they
sure.
seem to work for me. You know?
Well, you're doing it the right way, it seems, Eric and Kim, in which that you're not going out and making a big investment and then, you know, having to worry about, you know, covering that nut, you know, week to week. But you try something a little bit, and if it works, then try something a little bit more. So that sounds like a good business model.
You're right. And as you know, because you'll be talking to other people here in Florida, like I'll tell you, like Glenn Gary and me have been really working really good together at Cabaret of Magic. He'll call me when there's somebody big in town and say, hey, Eric, I just heard they're in town. I want to pick them up for a couple days, but I can't have them on Monday. Would you take them on Monday? And I'm like, yeah, and vice versa. Some guys might want a few more days, but I can't have them on a Monday, but he can have them Thursday through Friday. So I say, hey, why don't you spend a couple days at Disney, then go do Glenn's place. So mm-hmm. we've been really working together. And a lot of the clubs, like Simone in Jacksonville, she's really good when she has somebody for a lecture coming in, telling me they're in town. And they're always her clubs on a Sunday. So they do Jacksonville, and then they'll come down to Wizards and then fly out of Orlando on Tuesday. So we are getting a great network in Florida. We're kind of working as a pretty good team.
And same with Maria in Miami.
Yep.
So there's – we can fill their dates, even though we can't offer them a week. We can fill their dates, and they get a pretty nice little tour of Florida.
That sounds very good. Well, let me kind of wrap up and just to ask, you know, for those people who might be interested – and want to have, and they do have a Monday available, or they're going to be through the area, and want to contact you to see about working, see what your calendar looks like. How can they get in touch with you?
Just go to our website, Wizards, and that's with a Z at the end, wizardsmagictheater.com.
Well, they can see the venue there and get a feel for it, but they could also email us at magic@ij.net. That's usually the easiest way.
Okay.
Because that way they can send us a link and we can check them out. And
yes.
And, sure.
You know, we look for referrals, you know, because I get a lot of people now from Europe coming in, and maybe I don't know them here necessarily, but I call some friends in Europe and like, oh, he just won something at the Magic Circle. You'll be excited to have him, you know. So I'm like, all right, you're on the books.
Right. Well, that was what I was going to ask about, how did you go about vetting certain talent. I mean, saying yes and no, and if they're going to be contacting you, that just because they're available doesn't mean that you're going to be booking them.
No, and I'm really good about, I have some good connections, you know, like John Armstrong's really good to me at the Magic Castle. He gives me mm-hmm. some good input when I'm not sure, and I not only just watch your video, but I do call around just to get a vibe on, hey, he's great, whatever, or how, even hear how other people describe their act makes it easier for me to promote them when they're coming in. Like, hey, I heard this guy does the most amazing floating coin trick or whatever. And they go, oh, I got to come in for that, you know. So,
right.
Now, you know, even though I've had tons of FISM winners and world champions, I still get, you know, some local guys that kind of open up every once in a while something and give some people some time. So I made my venue so even if you're not a headliner, I try to find a spot for them when they're in town so they can – you know, open up for some of their heroes, you know.
And whenever that they're going to get booked there to work at Wizards, how much time do they need to have? Is it 45 minutes, an hour, 30 minutes? What is the show length?
The headliners are 45, and then, or I'll do, sometimes I'll do a split of 30 and 30 if I got two acts in town. So it just depends. But on average, the headliner does 45, and I open up the show, usually do some kind of fun giveaway prize. It gets everybody cheering, and then I do whatever I want to work on, and then introduce the act.
Yeah, that makes sense. I was wondering about what the flow is, you know, here at the Magic Island. It was for the longest time that Scott Hollingsworth was the MC, and he would introduce an act, and then they would have a manipulation act, or that would be maybe about 12 minutes or so. Then he'd come back and do something, then introduce the next act, which was usually a comedy magician that would be the headliner, do about 45 minutes or something. So it was a nice, good, tight hour. So it sounds kind of like that you follow a similar format with you MCing and then one or two acts kind of
yes.
fitting together. So if somebody just has a good 12 or 15 minute act, that doesn't mean that you wouldn't book them because you could fill it out with someone else doing a longer act.
Exactly. Sometimes that happens. I've had some named magicians that say, you know, Eric, really, I'm more of a competition act. I've got a solid 20. Mm-hmm. And I go, well, that's all right. I have another guy in town that's got a solid 12. I add that on there. And then sometimes I have some local variety acts. I'll put a juggler or something odd in the middle every once in a while just to give that little, it's a different night. And people have walked out and told me, you know what, Eric? I love when you do those variety nights when there's two or three acts. I've had as much as four acts one night where just bam, 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 you know. And
if you don't like this guy, hang on. You're going to love the next guy.
One.
Exactly. Well, it sounds like a great venue. And you have a Facebook page. They can find you where?
Wizards Magic.
Eric Wizards Olson.
For the Facebook.
And that's E-R-I-C-K.
Correct.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Eric's Wizards Olson.
And Olson is O-L-S-O-N.
There you go. Great. Well, thank you guys very much. I appreciate you both being on The Magic Word over here. And speaking of which, that the title of my podcast is called The Magic Word, so I'll ask you what your magic word is. I mean, it wouldn't have to be like abracadabra. What is it that's important to you? What is it that...
Family.
There you go. That's what I'm looking for. That kind of word. Well, excellent. Thank you guys both very much. I appreciate it. That was Eric and Kim Olson from Wizards Theater in Kissimmee, Florida. And for The Magic Word, this is Scotty out. This is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I have with me David and Sherry Evangelista in Newport Richey in Florida. How are you guys doing this evening?
Doing good.
Good. Now, I understand that Newport Richey is kind of in or near or suburb of Tampa. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And your theater is called Merlin's. Was that named after the Magic Shop? The Magic Shop came first, or the theater, or vice versa?
Actually, both at the same time. We actually renamed the shop, and we named the theater Merlin's at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
We're Visual Magic, which is our name that we manufacture magic under, and it was a little confusing to our customers. So we actually did a name change and opened the magic shop and renamed the map and opened the theater at the same time.
So when the theater, and how long have you been open, by the way?
We've been in this location for 6 years now.
Okay.
The theater. Since November, yes.
Right, of last year.
Wait, the theater just opened last year in November.
Right.
Correct.
Okay, gotcha. And as far as how the theater developed, did it just come about because you had additional room or because you wanted to have a place where that you could perform or you bring in other people, or how did this evolve?
Actually, all of the above. Yeah, we kind of wanted, originally it was going to be a performance area for me to rehearse in. And then we just took a look at it, and I, you know, put a bunch of lighting in and truly made it like a theater environment. And mm-hmm. said, this would be a great place for other magicians to actually come in and be able to actually, you know, perform and add on another bonus to our magic shop.
So do people actually walk through the magic shop in order to get to the theater?
No, completely separate doors.
Okay. And do you serve drinks, dinner, or anything like that, or is it just strictly a show only?
There's a show. We have, just basic, not alcohol drinks, just regular drinks and candy and chips and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the performers that you have come in there, you said you kind of had this as a practice place for yourself. And how has it evolved, and, you know, how do you book talent?
Well, basically, I handpick them. I've been doing magic since I was 9, so I've been around quite a while and used to do lecture tours and what have you. So I know a lot of the magicians from the conventions, personal friends of mine, and right now we have a committee that actually agrees on the talent that comes in. But for the most part, they're handpicked.
So when you say you have a committee, I guess that means you just have some friends saying, hey, I'm not as familiar with so-and-so, and what do you think about this guy? Or he sent me his credentials, and do you think this is somebody who would work well here?
Jerry?
Well, actually, it's a select group of people who are knowledgeable about the magic industry.
Get a little closer there to the microphone. Well, I barely hear you.
There's a select group of people that we consult with that are familiar with the magic industry.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to get the best of the best. And, this committee that's made up of, several different people are the ones that actually make the decisions, or advise us, I should say.
Right. And how many nights a week then, if somebody, once you book somebody, is it just one night, two nights, or which nights are you open?
Well, that would depend on our schedule. We usually do the events over the weekend. We've done Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, as many as five shows over the weekend. Also, some occasionally do lectures and also workshops.
Mm-hmm. And so that includes like matinees or?
Yeah. Okay. Like it would be a Friday night at 8 p.m. show, and then maybe a Saturday 4 p.m., and then an 8 p.m. and a Sunday matinee, and then probably in the evening we would do the lecture and or the workshop.
Do you have a pretty wide variety of performers who come in then, David? I mean, there might be children's entertainers. I was thinking matinees usually might be more for the kids or something, but I assume that you have close-up guys and some stand-up parlor-type entertainers as well.
No, actually, we most of our demographics of our audience are adults. Mm-hmm. We thought it was going to be more kid-driven, but it's not. And we have, you know, certain ones that come to every show, and it's just growing and growing. As for the performers, we're looking for basically anybody does cabaret or, you know, small stage type of stuff. We're staying away from the close-up because it's just too hard to see unless you have monitors and what have you. And we're trying to focus in on truly a show, more a sit down and watch it type of show, based on that.
Right. How many chairs are in the theater then?
65.
So yeah, it's a good size group for a nice kind of a parlor show. It sounds like would work well. And so as far as booking entertainers, do you book like months in advance, weeks in advance, or somebody calls you and if you happen to have an opening saying, you know, like next weekend, that you can say, yeah, we're open or we're booked now through Christmas or whatever?
No, we actually require about 6 weeks ahead of time to actually be able to market the show.
Makes sense.
And, yeah. So to print up whatever type of things that we're going to print or do any type of advertisement or anything, we actually have a publicist that we're working with that helps get the word out for us and handles all that for us.
Well, that was where I was going to be going next, is into marketing the thing. How is it that you put butts in the seats? I mean, you say you have a publicist. Aside from that, how else do you get the word out? I assume perhaps through social media. Do you do anything on the radio, television, billboards, rack cards, anything like in tourist locations, perhaps social media? What do you use?
We do a little bit of everything. But the main thing I think anybody listening to this needs to know is if you want to have a theater and you hope to fill it up every week after week or whenever you're doing the event, you shouldn't just concentrate on the magicians per se, because there's a lot more audience members or spectators than there are magicians. So we have targeted the general population for filling the seats, and we're hoping by next year to double the size of the theater.
So you have shows then every week. I assume that it's not like intermittently, because I think that that's one thing you have to have is some continuity, that you're always going to be open, let's say Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or whatever dates that you're going to be open. So that way the public knows that there will be a show, and if they happen to be telling friends, saying, hey, we saw a magic show the other night, it was on a Friday, now let's go see who's playing there tonight.
No, actually just the opposite. We're actually doing a show about every 6 to 8 weeks.
Oh, okay. So it's not on a regular basis every weekend kind of a thing. Okay, so there are like special events.
Yeah, there are special events, and they're, like I said, they are advertised. And you know, we're in a unique situation because our theater is directly across the street from an Elks Lodge, a very nice Elks Lodge that actually has a stage and seating capacity up to 450 people. So if we did have a larger event, we know that we have somebody that's, we're going to have a real easy sellout. We would just move it over there and then we just, you know, we could do one big show.
That's a nice arrangement, certainly. So that way that if you're going to be having a, you know, a more of a name type of a performer coming in where you anticipate you're going to certainly sell out to go over there. So that's good advice if someone is looking to open their own theater to be thinking about something like that. So that makes perfect sense. And also, David, what you were saying is that you need to have about 6 weeks in advance, because if you only do it every 6 or 8 weeks, then they need to, you know, kind of let you know in advance that they're going to be coming in. So do you have a lot of guys, since you're in Florida, I'm just assuming, like some cruise ship guys who saying, hey, that I'm going to be in town?
We have quite a few people that have contacted us, and we get a lot of lecturers that are coming through, that are passing through, that will contact us and what have you to find out, you know, what's available.
And so, kind of to wrap up over here, where can they contact you, or where is your website?
They can get to us by going to visualmagicshop.com, and there's a link on the bottom, of course, for email, and you could just let us, you know, give us a email and tell us you're going to be in town. Let us know about who you are. And the most important thing is, if this is a performer that's looking to get booked in, we need, you know, solid promotional material. Funny saying that, some of the best guys in the business aren't well prepared for that. So it takes quite a while to get the proper information from them. So
I found that to be pretty true also. It seems like a lot of times that there are those guys who are really clever, very good performers, but really can't market their way out of a bag. I mean, they just don't know how to promote their show and don't have all the marketing materials to really do with the video or whatever else, you know, they need. So, that's one thing it seems to be lacking, that is the business side. I mean, they have the creativity, artistic side, but not the business, models. So that's why you need to kind of have someone else to work with you in that case.
Right. And, you know, being that we know the magicians, we're magicians, so we, you know, mm-hmm. small group, we know everybody, everybody knows everybody, pretty sure. much. But they don't, a lot of the professionals that we run into, they don't realize, you know, hey, we're not really depending on the magic scene to make or break the theater. We're going to the general public, and most of them have no clue who the performer is. So
right.
it's very important to get the right information from them.
Do you ever book your show out to private events? I should say your theater out to corporate audiences or someone who wants to book it that way?
We have had calls for that, Scott, and because the theater is new, we're being selective about who we actually allow to come in and rent the theater, because we have a lot of time and money invested in special lighting and sound systems and, you know, stage and furnishings that, you know, we don't want a bunch of kids coming in ruining everything.
Sure. So you don't have it like as a birthday party venue where kids can come in like at McDonald's or kind of a thing?
No, I send them to Chuck E. Cheese if they call.
There we go. Exactly.
But the professional corporate meetings, yes. You know, we're happy to, you know, to coordinate bookings with the professional end of things instead of.
I find that interesting that you have started working them with a publicity agent or company that is actually going out and seeking those markets. So I would think that they would know who to contact and how to go about approaching them and marketing to that audience.
Yes, absolutely.
It makes it less work for us, and we can concentrate on making sure the show runs smoothly and
sure.
not having to worry about whether the tickets get printed on time or all the other obstacles that you'll run into.
Right, right. Well, once that the show has been decided and you start to promote that, are people able to purchase tickets online, or do they then just make reservations and they pay once they get there?
No, pretty much they can either buy them in the magic shop itself or at the box office next door when that's open, or they can purchase it online. We've pretty much sold out our shows, except for maybe one or two of them in the very beginning. So we're at the point right now where everybody knows that if they don't get their tickets right away. So now we're forced with our last show we had here. We were turning people away, both by phone calls and people arriving at the door. We simply couldn't seat no more. So we said, okay, we don't like this situation. We're going to have to expand to the move to the next level, and that is probably doubling the size of the theater.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. You know, when it gets to be so successful that you have to actually grow to a larger size. Well, I tell you, as we start to wrap up, let me just ask you, because the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, of what your magic word is. That doesn't necessarily mean like abracadabra or something that you might use on stage, but what is it that's important to you? What is it, Sherry and David, that means something to you that you wake up in the morning to get you going?
I can tell you what mine is.
What's that?
Scott, mine is legacy. And what I want to do, and I know David will second me on this, is we want to leave our legacy for the community in the area that we live in and our children grow up in, that, you know, the art of magic, of live, intimate magic is alive and well, and we want to keep the legacy alive.
That's great. That's great. That really is a good one.
Mine's a little simpler. Mine's more directed at the magicians, and it's a tagline that I've used for a long, long time. It's, the magic is real when you believe.
That's true. Wow. That's kind of heavy, too. I like that a lot. Well, listen, Sherry and David Evangelista, I thank you very much, and I wish you success with Merlin Theater there. And thanks for being my guest.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
for having us.
You're welcome. And so for the MagicWordPodcast.com, this is Scotty out. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and right now I have with me as my guest a longtime friend, Walt Anthony from San Francisco. How are you doing, Walt?
Doing really well, Scott.
Great. Good to hear your voice after all these years. You and I had gotten together on the staff with Kostya Kimlet a couple of years ago when we were working with him on the restaurant magic business. And I know that you really have a theatrical background, and that's what I want to talk with you about today is the Magic Theater, the San Francisco Magic Parlor. Now, how long has that been in operation out there?
We just entered our third year.
Wow. And let's talk a little bit about kind of the genesis, I guess, of that. Why did you decide to put together a theater?
And 5 years ago, we with three colleagues, we did a show called Eccentrics of the Barbary Coast, and we used the Chancellor Hotel, which is right in downtown San Francisco, right off Union Square, mm-hmm. and we had a very good relationship. We were all professionals, though, and our schedules kept interfering with the show, so we stopped after 4 months. The hotel was very disappointed, and it took us about 5 years, but I decided to reopen the parlor with myself as the feature. That way I could control the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And I had had a lot of corporate clients, and some of those fell off with the recession. And I had always wanted to have my own space where I could do things on my own terms and really highlight what I love and what I think my audiences would love. And so the parlor was a perfect setting. The hotel was very happy to have me back, and we negotiated a very good contract. And 2 years later, we're still running.
So is that something kind of like or inspired by Steve Cohen's Chamber Magic in New York City?
Not really. In that I have, rather than working in a suite, have a room that's dedicated to me, and we set up the parlor each night. And it's a very long process. It's almost a four-hour process to set up the room and then take it down. And what we have is a Victorian parlor, a La Belle Epoque Parisian salon, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as people walk in the door, they're immediately taken back in time over 100 years. So the inspiration was more the salons of the last century rather than what other magicians are doing. So we definitely have a period and historic feel.
In that particular case where people are going to be coming in, do they stop and have drinks first, or is there dinner included, or is it just the show only?
There's a lounge immediately outside our parlor, and they can have drinks. They're welcome to bring drinks into the parlor. There is a light dinner menu, and they're welcome to have dinner there, one of the many, many restaurants in Union Square.
And as far as performing there, you said this was a venue that you kind of developed for yourself and for performing for the public in general. But is this something that you do once a week, or how often is this done?
We do shows every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, so 3 days a week. My demographic is, and I'm really happy about this, about 65% locals who live in the Bay Area,
mm-hmm.
and then 45% or 35% tourists who are visiting San Francisco. I'm happy with the locals because it means I get referrals for other shows through the people that come to the parlor for corporate and private events. And I really like the tourists because I think people go some places just to be on vacation. But there are other places, like, for instance, Paris and San Francisco, where they're really coming for the ambiance and feel of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very curious about our history and what San Francisco is all about. And that's exactly what my show is about.
Interesting. So when you're talking about your show, I wanted to get to whether that this is something that you open up to others. Is it always just you? Do you have other magicians who perform who are local or friends of yours? Or is it open to outside magicians who can come in and you present them?
90% of the time, it's me. We have had people pass through town that have a really great reputation. Sandy Marshall, Jay Marshall's son,
mm-hmm.
Came to the parlor, and we asked him to open the second act with about 15 minutes. Jay Scott Berry was passing through town, and we had an open invitation for him. So as well-known magicians pass through town, people who I know their work and know will fit the ambience and direction of the parlor, we have them come in. This May, I broke my right wrist in two places, and I was very, very fortunate that David Facer, who is a local performer, was free. His show is completely different from mine. He mm-hmm. plays five separate characters, but it's that same theatrical storytelling magic genre, and he took over the parlor for 3 months and did a wonderful, wonderful job.
So you want to try to keep the same type of ambiance, I guess, as you say, where it's going to be kind of a Victorian style of thing. So did David have a that kind of a show, or was it completely different, or was it mind-reading magic? Comedy? What?
I've mentored David for about 10 years, and so obviously a lot of me rubbed off on him. He's mm-hmm. very original, very creative. His company is Paradox Magic, and his show was The World of Paradox, but it still had that otherworldly feeling and fit into our venue very well. What the parlor show is, it's stories and tales mainly, not all, but about San Francisco, the eccentric people who built the city, the neighborhoods, some of the history. And then each story is illustrated with a magical happening, very often using artifacts or curios or antiques from that person or period. So it's very much interactive theater, and it's not your quote-unquote traditional magic show. It's very theatrical storytelling magic.
I see. And so obviously you'd be very selective as to who you would invite or who, if they'd contacted you saying, hey, I'm interested in coming out, that you have an idea of what you want them to do and where you think that they might fit.
Yeah, we talk to each other and look at the selections they would be bringing in and that kind of thing. And if there's a match and someone's passing through, the audiences really like having a taste of what other people are doing.
Mm-hmm. In that case, where can people contact you if they wanted just to send you a copy of a video or say, I'm going to be in town, let's talk?
Magic Parlor, and that's P-A-R-L-O-R, the American spelling,
mm-hmm.
at att.net. So that's Magic Parlor at att.net. And if people want to see, get a feel for our parlor, our website is sanfranciscomagicparlor.com, and they can link to our blog from there.
And how many people does the theater seat there, Walt?
It's small. We seat 32 people. With a shoehorn, we can get 34 in. The perfect house for me is around 25 to 30. Of course, some nights we have as few as 8 or 10, and I love that as well because then it really feels that the people are in my home, in my parlor.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the feeling of the parlor is that it is not a theater. It is my home. They're walking into my home from the second they walk in the door, I behave as a host would, hosting his own party, invite them to have drinks and bring them in, find out where they are from, why they came to the show. So when the show starts, I know a lot about them, maybe even the name of their dog, and we feel we know each other. So there's not a lot of theatrics. It's very casual, and that's what we're looking for. So I purposely wanted an intimate space where kids could know everyone, where no one is more than four rows at the most from the stage. And I play a lot of the audience. I'd say about 50-60% is on stage, and the rest I'm walking up and down, actually addressing people. So I'm using the whole room.
It sounds pretty much like it's obviously a very intimate surrounding. So is it mostly close-up that would be on the table, or it's also kind of some stand-up or a combination?
It's stand-up. My forte is parlor magic. I can do a huge group of, you know, 600 or 100 or 1,000, and I can do close-up at a table. But we have a tiny stage, mm-hmm. and what I'm doing are, again, like they would in Victorian time, Robert Houdin, parlor magic. It's right under their nose, though, and that makes it very impressive. I do a floating table, very, very different from Losander's routine, but obviously one of his that was custom made for me. There's a story about it giving its antique provenance, and literally it is a foot from the front row person's nose. And when they see that happening right there, it's obviously a parlor piece, but it adds to the deception and theatrical power a lot.
Now, you were talking about getting this started early on with a small performing troupe, and they kind of faded away, and you decided you continued to want to do this. How, if someone wanted to recreate this in their own community or city, and they have a pretty sizable metropolitan area where they can go to a hotel and find a room such as this, what would you suggest would be some of the first steps towards going to negotiate with a potential venue?
It's sort of funny. J. Scott Barry and I were talking about a week ago about the trials and tribulations of self-producing, and I've talked with other theater owners that are theater leasers like me that have similar parlor things scattered throughout the United States, and mm-hmm. basically we all say, "Good luck and God bless you." we have had so many magicians come in and go, "This is cool. I'm going to do this." And it's like, go ahead. I'll even tell you how and bless you.
Yeah.
The first thing is a space. Finding an appropriate space. I talked to 30 to 40 hotels originally, and they were very anxious to have me. But there was always, well, if we have a bar mitzvah or a corporate event or a wedding, we're going to bump you from the room. And one of my criteria was that I would have a space that I would have every night, because consistency is a big, big trick to keeping an audience and keeping your reputation going.
Right.
The other thing is location, location, location. And as I said, I couldn't have a better one right on the cable car line, right downtown on Union Square. The hotel is a 100-year-old hotel. It was built in 1914 for the 1915 World's Fair after the earthquake and fire.
What's the name of the hotel? What's the name of the hotel?
The Chancellor Hotel.
Chancellor. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful boutique hotel, still family-owned. And it's a blank canvas on which I knew I could paint anything. One of my other criteria, oddly enough, is I hate stack chairs. Stack chairs for me immediately drag you out of the time and put you in a hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my criteria was to have wooden, real, non-stack chairs, which we have. So the first thing is finding the appropriate space. Actually, some of my colleagues over the country will have three or four spaces, like Victorian houses, the historical houses in their town, and they will travel from one to the other, one to the other. So it's a luxury for me to have one space. The next thing is coming up with a business plan, working out something with the restaurant or hotel or house, wherever you are, to come up with something that's equitable to them, that they really want you there, but you know you're going to be able to afford if you build the business.
Mm-hmm.
The other consideration is thinking it through, having a team around you. I actually had three what I call artistic advisors that were really three directors. That was Brian Scott, who was part of the Eccentric show 5 years ago, David Facer, who was part of that, and Tobias Beckwith, who's an incredible theatrical creator and has an incredible background in mind, who's also right now Jeff McBride's producer.
Right.
So it takes a village, as they say.
So you kind of did some brainstorming with these other friends.
Oh, brainstorming, creating, directing. I have a long, long time, many decades, acting background. And what I know as an actor is that everybody needs a director.
Mm-hmm.
And magicians are largely unaware of that, because you have to bring a show that's consistent, creative, in my case, scary, funny, sad, and encouraging and inspiring, all those flavors in your persona. And you can't do that alone.
And
so
then,
a theme was a big part of creating it. And then the marketing and PR. The biggest fallacy is if you build it, they will come. If you build it, they won't come. So I spend, besides my time Thursday, Friday, Saturday at the parlor, 30 to 40 hours a week doing marketing and promotion and PR.
Mm-hmm. That's like putting out the rack cards or trying to do whatever free advertising that you can get to get it promoted and perhaps get television shots or whatever, I guess.
Yeah, and being small, being 30-some seats, I don't have a huge marketing budget.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't afford a lot. I did experiment. I had a wonderful deal that was part cash, but also part comps and reciprocal with a television station here. And I did a 15-second television commercial, and that in itself wasn't highly successful, but it landed a very large segment on a local television show, and that was very powerful. I work with the Union Square Business Association on their newsletter. I've done press releases, getting as many of the newspaper reviewers and critics out as possible. I work with other historical places, the California Historical Museum, the old San Francisco Mint, and I'll do preview shows for them. I do preview shows and visit with the hotel concierge constantly. So part of it is shaking hands and getting out there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot is emailing, calling, and mailing press releases and press packages. You have to be very imaginative.
Well, then another thing I think negotiating with the venue, let's say in this case a hotel, would be to have something that's going to make it financially profitable for both of you. And it should be worth both of your times. I mean, you shouldn't be paying them so much such that, you know, you're doing it for free when you're trying to make a living out of this. And on the other hand, they need to get something out of it too. I know there are different obvious ways of doing this where you pay so much per head, or there could be a percent or a guaranteed four walls, you pay X dollars or whatever. You know, you don't have to go in the detail of that, but what was your thinking when you were trying to come up with some sort of a financial plan to work with? Did you suggest something to them, or did they come back and say, this is what we will do for you?
I suggested to them a flat rate that was in my nut that I felt was affordable
mm-hmm.
for me,
mm-hmm.
and then a percentage basis. So if I'm selling out, they're doing well. The other thing that I said when we first met is, I would love you to be the home of the San Francisco Magic Parlor. If you decide not to, someone else is going to be the home of the San Francisco Magic Parlor,
mm-hmm.
and that might not be something that you're happy with down the line. And they like, because they are a boutique hotel that offers amazing customer care and amazing amenities, they like saying, we're the home to San Francisco Magic Parlor. No other hotel has something like this,
mm-hmm.
Where it fits their 100-year-old tradition. And then, of course, having the lounge right outside our door, we are encouraging people to, before or at intermission or after, avail themselves to that. And so they're selling, in some cases, appetizers or dinners, in many cases, bottles of wine or champagne and mixed drinks. So, and we're bringing other people in, locals who are seeing this amazing hotel and saying, wow, when Aunt Sally visits, we have to make sure she's here. So, they are getting, obviously, extra bar,
revenue. Funds, mm-hmm.
And, they're also getting more exposure. And they also have a reputation, that is enhanced by us, I think. Any of our promotion or advertising, it always says San Francisco Magic Parlor at the Chancellor Hotel.
So it gives them that exclusivity, basically, that's certainly worth it.
Yes, absolutely. The other thing they like about us is that we are seamless. If a guest comes in and says, hey, I need a fork to take this up to my room, if there's nobody there to do it, we get the fork. If one of their guests comes and says, how do I get to Fisherman's Wharf, we stop and tell them. We offer the same level of
customer service
and customer care.
Mm-hmm. Kind of, you say, yeah, customer care or a concierge service that the hotel would offer. So you kind of work hand in glove with them.
Absolutely. And then their front desk, when people come in, will say, oh, do you know we have this show going? And hotel guests are given a discount. They're giving a twofer deal. And that sent out a notice in their confirmation email. There's posters. There's cards that are in their rooms. So, again, this is an extra amenity or service to the hotel. So part of it is to work out things other than cash that is valuable to your venue as well as to you that makes them want to have you there. Because it's one of the most difficult hurdles is finding the appropriate space and a space you can be at, as I say, going into our third year. The other thing is coming up with your team. I have a house manager, hostess that works with me. The energy in the room drops enormously if there's just one person in there. And finding the right people, training them, and having the same belief and attitude in the parlor. We never mention the word trick or effect or illusion, because for me that breaks the spell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the people are in the parlor, they are in a magical atmosphere where magic is totally real. And when they walk out, they'll go, wow, that really fooled me, or wow, he was, you know, entertaining. But while they're there, I want them to go back and go to the place where they believe in the Tooth Fairy and Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny again.
Wow. That sounds very good. Sounds like you've been successful in locating not only the place, but also delivering everything that you said you were going to do. So did you have a business plan going into this, or was it something that just kind of fell into place as you kind of were putting it together?
A total business plan.
I think you have to have that.
You have to. You have to try and foresee every step of the way that you can, because you're going to be blindsided by a dozen other things that you didn't plan for. And I had a 3-month plan, a 6-month plan, a year plan. Now I have a 3-year and 5-year plan in place. And the entire process is one of growth. Everything is a work in progress. Every 2 or 3 or 4 months, I'll switch out a few things. I'll take some of the what I call B effects or illusions of the show and replace them with A or A plus ones. I had in my mind that I wanted to do one about the hauntings in the hotel. It has a lot of documented ghosts. And it took me a year to figure out what was the right thing and the right way to put in the show. The parlor itself has had a transformation where working within this space, we add a little. We added some draperies for the backstage area. We enhanced the table settings with fresh flowers and fairy lamps. We put our own curtains over the front entrance doors. So it's upgrade, 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 and that's
mm-hmm.
part of the planning process. And looking into our budget for doing that and trying to work within that budget, looking at the numbers are crucial to your host venue as well as to you, and planning for the unexpected, like when I broke my wrist, having a backup.
That's very important, I believe, to have a plan. I just had a podcast recently with a couple of magicians in North Carolina who have produced their own show, and they've taken it on the road, and they have different venues, different theaters that they are going to. But they went in to these different venues, to colleges and other theaters, just with a business plan. And when you go in and you're prepared, I think that it shows, first of all, more professionalism, and that you're prepared, and that and they are more willing to work with you rather than just going in and saying, I kind of have this idea. So I think that you have to have a solid purpose and something not just formulated in your mind, but actually written down, and you've gone over this and practiced it. So when you're going to be going to talk with the management of whatever venue, the hotel or whatever, that you have that plan in mind, and you lay it out saying, here's what I want to do. And you got that right, I believe, there, Walt, where you're going to be saying, this is what I want to do 6 months, 1 year, 3 years, 5 years down the road, and continuing to build on this.
One of the things that I think we as magicians are excited about is show business. And when I'm coaching, I do coaching and directing for other magicians. What I drum in is it's business show. Mm-hmm. We don't like to look at that, but it's business show. You have to walk in there as any other professional or vendor. We aren't entertainers as much as we are small business owners. And that's what we have to present in a suit and tie. Someone who's wonderful at this is our mutual colleague, Kostya Kimlott. Mm-hmm. He is totally prepared. When he walks in that door, he knows what their needs are as well as his needs. He knows what value he can bring to them as well as what value they can bring to him. He's going in there with a full portfolio, a full plan. He lays it out in a very clean way, without any hiccups. He's dressed professionally. He acts professionally. And this is something we can all gain great, great value from. The hotel, my Chancellor Hotel, doesn't care really what I do in the parlor. They do care that my deal with them is fulfilled, that we are seamless, that we're going to enhance the hotel, not bring it down. That's what they care about.
You maintain their image.
We are doing for them.
Yeah, you maintain their image then, too.
Absolutely. The minute one of my team is rude to a guest or has a confrontation with one of our guests, everything can fall apart.
Yeah. Well, Walt, thank you very much. I appreciate so much all of the advice, and I believe that listeners are going to be getting something out of this then as well. And if they have, again, more questions, and if they want to contact you for anything directly, you said your email address was what again?
MagicParlor@att.net. And I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this. I've had so many magicians in the last 2 years ask about this. How can I do it, and what do I need? And one more thing, you need money to start. You can't start this on a shoestring. I used a Kickstarter campaign as a way to bring people in as supporters, my parlor partners, people to have a financial investment, and that was about a third of the budget. For my private work, I'd saved several thousand dollars. And you'll have to be patient and wait for that to come back to you.
Mm-hmm. You have to plan on actually losing money with that investment, thinking of it again long term, that it is going to be investment. You'll not only get that money back, but also as an investment, you'll get a return on that.
Absolutely. And it takes you a good year. And everybody has told me this, whether they do historical tours of the city or the theaters, that you need to assume that you're not going to make any money for the first year, and you're not going to get known and build a reputation for the first year. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, it's very exciting and very fulfilling. But you have to plan ahead or you'll fail.
Yeah. Well, one last thing as we start to wrap up over here, Walt, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So my question to you is, what is it that's important to you? What makes you tick? What is your magic word? It doesn't, I'm not looking for abracadabra kind of a thing. It could be a word, a phrase, something that's important.
I'm going to do a little pitch here.
Okay.
I have a book that I wrote 4 years ago, Tales of Enchantment and The Art of Magic. And it's been a bestseller as far as a magic book is or can be for the last 4 years. And I talk about my mission. I think it's important for a magician to know what he's doing and why he's doing it and who he's doing it for. And what I try to do is educate, inspire, entertain, and empower. Those are my four absolute magic words for me and for my audiences. And if I can do those four things, I feel I've succeeded as an entertainer, and I've succeeded in my show, and I've succeeded in fulfilling my own desires.
Well, I think you've also succeeded here in giving a lot of great information to our listeners, and hopefully that they will go out and do likewise. So, Walt, thank you again very much for joining us here on The Magic Word.
Scott, thank you so much for the opportunity. This has been a lot of fun. It's good to connect with you again. And I'm always looking to elevate magic to the next step for all of us. So I really appreciate this opportunity.
You're welcome. And that was Walt Anthony. And for the MagicWordPodcast.com, this is Scotty out. Hello, this is Scott Wells with the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I have with me for this session of the podcast, Mr. Daniel Chun out in the Bay Area in California. Hi there, Dan.
Hello, Scott.
I wanted to talk with you about your theater, the Bay Area Dinner Show, which has been running for how many years?
We've been doing it for a little bit over 3 years.
Mm-hmm. And tell me a little bit about the beginning of this also. Is this something that you originally developed just as a outlet for you to perform or for other friends, or what was your thinking?
My thinking was to have fun and perform on days that were a little bit slower for us.
Mm-hmm.
So we mainly operate on Monday through Thursdays, mainly on Mondays, and we have a fun time. It's a real great community and a team approach.
And when you're saying a team approach, are there people who are friends of yours who are performing then as well, or like a variety act type of thing, and then you're emceeing or you're doing something too, or how's that? What's the flow of the program?
My friend Cal Tong, he's the MC. He's the president of the IBM Ring 216.
Mm-hmm.
I have a good friend, Alan Leeds. He's in he works as a consultant, and part time he is a magician. So he does some, they both do some really great magic, including Fantastic Fred. And those are current main team members. We also had many other guest artists pass through. We have had Shudogawa, Fritz from the Netherlands, Mayuko. We've had the Red Panda Acrobats doing variety acts. A hat juggler named Bree come through recently. We've had a Jack Alexander also come through.
So it sounds like you had a pretty good variety of people who have come through, and also some of those are fairly large acts. I mean, Shoot, I know, has a stage act that he does, but mainly, of course, known for his close-up. But when you talk about the Chinese acrobats and the hat juggler and everybody, it makes me think that this is a pretty large stage with a pretty high fly area, I guess.
We do have several rooms. We have 12 different rooms to choose from. Our partner venue was a friend of mine who hired us many years in the past, who's a restaurant owner, and they also own some other businesses in the Bay Area. So they're very well connected. And we just lucked out one day to perform at the restaurant one time. They saw the owner caught part of what we did and liked what we did. So they invited us to perform for them the next day. And this was during the holiday season. So Dynasty Restaurant in Cupertino is our partner venue. It has 10 VIP private dining spaces.
Wow.
Private dining spaces are one of the most important parts of our business model because it's scalable. We can go from a small VIP show for 12 people, which we've done for companies like PayPal, all the way up to 80 people in one of their larger rooms, and in their back banquet hall, they seat, I think, 600 plus.
And so are you carrying the staged curtains and backdrop or whatever you need from room to room, or do you leave those there all the time?
We can leave them there, but we typically we run once a week, so we have other performances throughout the week in different locations for private events. I'm still doing a lot of private events.
So how long does it take you to set up and tear down?
It takes us a little bit over an hour and a half.
That's not bad.
And to tear down, it takes us about the same amount of time.
Now, you say that you have some other people who are coming in then from time to time, some other outside acts, variety acts, not necessarily magicians, but mainly magicians. How do you go about selecting those? Do they contact you directly, or do you know these guys and say, hey, since you're going to be in town, would you come by and perform, or how does that work?
A word has gotten around that it's a very fun place to perform. People want to check out what we're doing. And it's a really, we try to make it a real fun atmosphere by letting the most of our guest acts go first. So after they do their 5 to 15 minute bit, they sit back and relax and enjoy the rest of the show, which has been very fun for our guest artists. They've mentioned that. Also afterwards, I take everyone out to dinner as well. So they eat right when the guests are eating as well. They get to sit and mingle. The experience consists of walk around magic for about 20 minutes as the guests arrive. We have different number of performers who show up depending on how many guests we've had. We have as little as 10 guests all the way up to 150 guests that show up for our ticketed events. For private events, we can even scale it up bigger than that. If we have like a corporation buying out our dinner show and we don't have to deal with check-ins or ticketing, we can bring in a lot more people.
So it sounds like also that this does include a full dinner. So a ticket price includes dinner and the show?
That's correct.
And is the dinner pretty much the same from night to night, or do they have a menu of things they can select, or how does that work?
We have two set menus, and we can customize it for corporate events. We have one that's pretty standard fare, which is an 8-to-10-course meal. That includes dessert and appetizers and a soup. It's family style, so it's family style dining. It was deliberately done family style so our walk around magicians could get to a table of 10 to 12 and get the energy out of the audience. Because if you're performing for only two people, you're not going to get a lot of energy, and you're using a lot of resources in order to get to two people, as opposed to if you do it for a table of 10, you can get to more people, and you get a lot of that energy out of them.
When you talk about just having a few people versus a lot, and then scaling it, determining how many tickets you sell from one week to the next, that determines what size room you're going to be performing in, I guess. How do you get the word out? What is your what form of advertising and marketing do you use?
I have several remarketing advertising campaigns. I've been spending a lot of time doing that, from AdWords to AdWords. To Facebook, geo-targeting. There's a lot of things to learn about that aspect of marketing. In the beginning, we've used a lot of ticketing services like Groupon and Living Social. We've made them a lot of money, but we're starting to wean ourselves off those ticketing services.
That's pretty true. I think if you're just wanting to try to get the word out that Groupon, some of those are good ideas, but you're really not making any money at that. So you really need to know what you're getting into before that you make those decisions, saying, here is what I hope to achieve by using Groupon, for an example.
We are happy to make other people money, and we're happy to give our service out there, because we realize that once you give first, things come back to you.
Sure.
So being, not having a lot of big business model to begin with, we were just kind of test marketing our beta product, and that was a great way to do it as we are continually going through different stages of our product cycle.
And how did you work out your financial arrangements then with the restaurant? I mean, there are different kinds of things you could do, obviously, in which that it's like we will guarantee you of X number of people and you can make money off of the dinners, or that we'll give you X dollars per head or a percentage or whatever. You don't have to necessarily explain the details of that, but what kind of was your philosophy or policy going into it and approaching the restaurant initially?
I chose to start these on Mondays. So it wasn't really a money-making venture. I just wanted to use that as a spinoff to build my private party clientele.
Mm-hmm. But talking with the restaurants then themselves, let's say then on that Monday night, you were just saying that since this is a typically slow night for restaurants, that I can help bring in more customers?
Absolutely. I've worked with Koi Palace or Koi Garden in Dublin. I've worked with several venues in Dublin, some other venues in San Jose and San Francisco, and even Emeryville. So we've kind of honed things through different rooms. And we can also refer them, our clients, banquet spaces in which we've run our dinner show before, which sets up less of variables. As a magician or performer, you're always looking at the room layout. But if you suggest to them a venue where you can do a little bit more, it's very conducive. For example, we have things that I do that are very specialized. I'll juggle 3, 4, and 5 balls and also do the Chinese yo-yos, 1 and 2 Chinese yo-yos, and do a handstand push-up while the yo-yo spins from my mouth.
Wow.
The thing is with this juggling routine is we do it to light up juggling props. So it's important for us to know where the lights are and also know that we can get the lights to a specific feel. For our restaurant venue, we have some very cool things about the venue. We have like some cool neon lights along the top that really create an atmosphere look for it. You can check out BayAreaDinnerShow.com and my website DanChanMagic.com to see a couple of the venue spaces that we have, and you can kind of see the look of the bar and many of the other aspects.
Now, when some of the companies are saying that they want to do a buyout for the evening, then they could take a look at that and say, well, we would like to have this room or that room. So by looking at the website, they can kind of get a choice. And I guess if they – and then you can say, well, really, that you have too few or too many people, and we're going to need to move you to this other room.
Yeah, we've gone through a couple of different products cycles. And one of the things we did was we looked at things like Warren and Annabelle's. Warren in Hawaii is a very nice guy, really right. Great show to check out, warrenannabelles.com. He was one of my inspirations to start this. I looked at the Magic Castle, of course, and also Caesar's Magical Empire. Those were all venues that I've been to that I just wanted to fuse some of the best elements from those venues.
Right. And it's interesting also how that you came across this venue, because I know some have, you know, just gone up and down the street or have made personal visits to all this, but you kind of fell into it. It sounds like very coincidentally and turned out to be quite successful for you.
Yeah, we've been really blessed with great people who've liked our product. The owner owns a couple of other industries. So it was really conducive to have someone who saw what we did, who wanted to support performing artists.
Right. All right. Well, great. Thank you very much, Dan. I appreciate your time over here. And, you know, the title of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So I wanted to ask you what your magic word might be. It doesn't have to be necessarily like a single word. I don't mean like abracadabra. It could be something that is a phrase, could be something that is a sentence, something that's important to you, whatever it is that makes you wake up in the morning. What is it that's your philosophy?
Well, it's important to have a memorable name. Like for me, I've been going by Dan Chan, the Magic Man. Dan Chan rhymes. Magic Man is an alliteration. So rhymes and alliteration are very hypnotic in marketing. A lot of marketers use that. You know, I am Sam, Sam I am, or Dr. Seuss continues to use that phrase. To me, it was a little bit hokey. Now I go by, I answer my phone and say Dan Chan presents when I answer my phone. But I've done over 5,000 shows over the last 15 years at different venues, and kids, families, and even corporations continue to remember my name as a memorable name with that, Dan Chan, the Magic Man. So find a name that's memorable for you.
That's good advice. Sounds great. Thank you, Dan. I appreciate your time then today for speaking to us here on The Magic Word. And if they need more information, again, that they go to BayAreaDinnerShow.com. Thanks very much. And that was Dan Chan, the Magic Man, for The Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out. For more content, including pictures of those I spoke with in this podcast, commentary, links, timestamps, show notes, and more, be sure to visit the webpage at themagicwordpodcast.com. And you can help spread the word by liking the Magic Word Podcast on Facebook and sharing with your friends. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening. Till next time, Scotty out.